Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Kim Lovert, the founder and CEO of Abstract. Abstract is a shared shopping plugin for Shopify stores. This allows multiple shoppers to shop for one recipient all through a shared shopping cart capability. It also allows the buyers to communicate with each other through the shared and social shopping experience directly on an e-commerce website, and they are soon going to bring shared payment capability to the app as well. We had a fantastic conversation about this new era of gift giving where people jointly come together to buy a gift for someone they love or care about. Enjoy. This is the E-Commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Kim Lovert from Abstract. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today. I've been very excited to join the podcast.
Yeah, we've tried to make this happen a few times, and then you had a sick son and you had to look after him, which is totally understandable. He's only 8 months old, you said. So family comes first, and I believe in that. But third time lucky, I think, is what they say.
Yeah. Exactly.
So it's not, nice to have you here. Yeah. Good. I'm glad to hear that he's one truly recovered. Now, we were also talking about off air before we get into Abstract and before we get into everything else. You are currently commuting about every second week to the United States, aren't you?
Yeah. So it's a little bit back and forth. A couple of weeks here, a couple of weeks back home in Copenhagen. So yeah, but back and forth.
And it's not a short flight. You were saying it's like somewhere between 10 and 12 hours, depending on which direction you're going. So that's I think you might win the record for longest commutes of any guest I've ever had on every couple of weeks. But no, I'm impressed. I'm really impressed. But hey, when you're a young, scrappy startup and you're trying to raise funds and you're trying to grow your business and you're trying to be where the epicenter of commerce is happening, San Francisco is probably a pretty good place to be, especially if you're talking to VCs on the daily.
Exactly. It is. It is. Lots of stuff happening here. And yeah. It's just inspirational to be here with all the startups and talking to a lot of cool founders as well. And we all inspire each other. And this is certainly, as you mentioned, the epicenter for what we're doing.
Love it. Love it. And how the heck did you get into this space? You're building a Shopify app currently, and we'll talk about that. But how did you get into the e-com space at all? Everybody always has an interesting story of how they got dragged into the e-commerce space.
Yeah, it's a really good question. So I actually had a consultancy business that I started back in 2008. And in my consultancy, we were doing, obviously e-commerce, corporate websites, and digital self-service solutions. So I've been working in e-commerce since 2000. And we had, in my previous company, we had a lot of different customers, some actually where we assisted building their global e-commerce platforms, mostly B2B actually, but yeah, so I have been working with e-commerce for many years myself as a consultant with our customers, but in the later years, more as a manager as our company grew. Yeah. And yeah, so not a lot of time coding for the past couple of years, but so that's something I'm back and doing and which I think is fun. So that, yeah. So I've been in e-commerce for many years, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And why Abstract? Why this social and shared shopping concept, especially if you come from more the B2B e-commerce background, which is something that's near and dear to my heart. I do a lot of consulting around B2B e-commerce. Why move into more the retail e-commerce space, and why specifically apps? Why specifically Shopify? And why were you scratching an itch? Was it something you saw a gap in the market? What made you say, hey, look, we think we can do this either first or better, and we think we are the ones that need to fill this gap?
Yeah, that's again a very good question. So I think it comes down to what I've been doing for many years. As I mentioned, we were doing e-commerce, but we were also doing digital self-service solutions in my consultancy business. And what has dawned on me for many years doing e-commerce is that for the past 10 years, more or less everything we did, besides obviously doing the back-end work on streamlining processes for the stores, integrating with ERP systems, and essentially just streamlining processes with relation to e-commerce. On the front end side, it's been very much about personalization for the past 10 years. That's been the mainstay for what we've been doing. But if you actually look at the experience that the shoppers are offered online, it hasn't really changed for the past 20 years. It's more or less still just a catalog with some power put to it. And I think for me, that just has been an itch for many years, also because we were doing digital self-service. So I was thinking, like, it's okay that I can go on an online store and buy, but all my communication about what I'm buying with my friends or with my girlfriend about what grocery should we buy is always happening on other channels, like a messenger thread, if we're using that, or an iMessage or whichever preferred tool. Actually, when we were working late hours in the consultancy, having to buy food in the evening for the teams that were staying around, but that was always a hassle because we had to, so we had a Slack channel where people would type in what they wanted. And then in the end, one person would have to go into the store and then buy. And there was always something that kind of got messed up. So I started thinking about why not drag the social aspects of the shopping experience into the store itself. And that was where it all started. And we started talking to customers about what could actually happen once you start doing that. And it can actually create some very interesting data sets, I would say. So today, all the social interactions that we have, if we're doing a group shopping, buying a gift for a friend, for example, let's say we would create a group on Messenger where we then discuss ad hoc, what should we buy for this particular friend? All that social engagement will happen on Messenger, which means that Facebook will actually know more about how our social interactions impact our buying behavior. And we started thinking about saying, if we pull that into the store and essentially give the store access to this data, they can actually utilize that for input for their product development teams. If their customers are talking about particular items, saying, I like this, I don't like that, or have a preference for different colors, but you can suddenly start seeing how are we impacting each other with our dialogue on the different subjects that we're looking or products we're looking at. There's a really interesting value with the data set that is being generated underneath the hood. And that's, I think, topics that we've been discussing with the customers. And also just, so we are in between, we have this shopping layer, which is a new way or a new way to engage socially when I shop online with my friends, which we can see some benefits in that. But there's also the data underneath, which adds additional benefits for the store. And it actually works, I would argue, both in B2C and B2B, but there are different ways it can be configured.
Absolutely. And look, I think there have been a few different platforms that have tried to nail this over the years. There's PaySquad, there's a few others. In fact, we had PaySquad on our podcast quite a while ago now. It's going back into 2021 when we had them on the podcast. It's been a long time now, but there's been a few different platforms, I think, that have tried to nail the team shopping idea. And it feels like the idea behind this is primarily gift giving and a scenario where, hey, I need to buy mom a birthday gift and it's siblings, it's three siblings. Oh, are we going to go in together? You know, if we buy individual gifts, then maybe we aren't able to afford that nice of a gift. So we buy her three small things. If we pooled our money together, then we're able to buy mom a really nice gift. Maybe we're able to buy her something a little bit more expensive, something a little bit more meaningful because we've pooled our funds together. Or we're shopping for a mutual friend and, hey, look, let's all come together and let's get them the gift they really want because they've told us what they really want. An individual cannot buy that, cannot afford that. Or we've also seen things like gift registries become really popular for things like baby showers, for things like birthdays, et cetera, for Valentine's Day, for different types of events and activities, family, significant family, quinceañeras here in Mexico, religious activities, things like that, that need gift giving. I feel like there's many scenarios where groups of people are trying to buy something for someone. And it feels like that this kind of team shopping environment, it's an understood and accepted thing that this is a need. But I think what you're trying to say is we don't feel anybody's cracked it yet. And we're trying to crack it. And we're trying to make it easy on the most widely deployed B2C/D2C e-commerce platform in the world, which is Shopify, right?
That's true. And actually, so you mentioned Shopify and I forgot to answer that aspect. So currently, where our platform or add-on works with or is fairly well tested with Shopify, but it can actually be adapted to any platform. We do have a few stores that are using it as well. We have some completely custom stores that are using it, custom built stores. So that we have an integration pattern that can more or less integrate this with any type of store you'd have. So underneath our product, we actually have a development platform, which will enable other developers to both, I would say, adapt our add-on to their particular store, but also to actually extend on the functionality that we provide. But we're starting with Shopify, as you mentioned, because it's the biggest platform out there, and it's really scaling fast at the moment. Yeah, and so that's why we focused there initially. But it can work with more or less any store platform.
And I'm assuming that you integrate with checkout. So you become almost like a payment method at checkout. You become almost like your own gateway. And you become basically what you're doing is you're allowing people to have a card ID, as it were. And they're able to the person who's the primary buyer, the person who's creating the adding the product or products to the cart, then they choose who they invite to be a co-payer of that cart. And effectively, you're creating, I'm guessing it's a draft order in Shopify speak, I'm guessing. Yeah. And then effectively what you're doing is you're saying, okay, here's the cart total. We're going to take individual payments through our platform. And then once that's paid in full, then we'll effectively execute the order on the Shopify platform, complete the order on behalf of that individual. So you've effectively become a multi-payer payment gateway in the Shopify ecosystem. Is that from a technical perspective? Do I understand how the system works?
I actually think you're a bit ahead of where we are. We have that in our development pipeline. We don't have it yet, but it is certainly, so we started with the shared shopping experience and just say what we would do today, if we're a group buying a gift, we would have all the dialogue and engagements on other platforms to figure out what we want to buy together. And once we want to buy it, one of us in the group would then go in, add those different items to the cart and then check it out. And then afterwards, we would split the payment. So the way it works with our shared shopping module right now is that we can essentially invite the same group of people into the store, and then we can engage socially within the store. All of us can actually add to the cart. And so I can add something and which may inspire you and say, oh, I think we should have this as well as part of the gift. So we can all add to the cart, but in the end, one of us will still check out the cart. So the cart is actually being replicated for each of us on each of our sessions, if you can put it like that. And then one of us will check out using the built-in cart functionality in Shopify. We do actually have, as you mentioned, in the pipeline to build this shared payment feature as well. And that is actually because once we started engaging with customers about the shared shopping feature, a natural progression has been in the dialogue. Oh, what about payments? And initially, having been in e-commerce for many years, we've made a lot of payment gateway integrations. My thought was, this is something the payment gateway needs to provide. And actually, a year and a half ago, I was here in the Bay Area as well for a conference where there were a lot of payment gateway providers at the conference. And I met up with a number of them just to say, hey, do any of you provide this kind of shared payment feature? And to my
shock, horror,
shock, exactly. I was like, oh, no one does this. So I think that's a natural opportunity that pops up once you start actually supporting the group behavior. And I think the funny thing has been that when I'm talking to people about the group shopping feature or shared shopping feature, everyone just naturally asks, but what about the payment? Can we split the payment? And it becomes a barrier to using it, saying, I can't split the payment. And my follow-up question usually is, but what do you do today? Oh, but today then I pay and then I collect afterwards. To me, it's just, I think it actually shows a bit of the power in what we're doing. People are very used to buying in groups, but and someone actually doing the payment. So this is actually just a natural progression of what we're doing, that you can also split the payment on checkout. And we haven't really seen that yet. So obviously, it's in our pipeline. We don't have that functionality yet. Also, because once you start handling payments, there are different regulations coming into play. We do have a solution for that, how we're going to do it, but without us becoming a payment gateway. But yeah, that's something we're working on.
Yeah, obviously you can tokenize things. There's a few different approaches you can take here. But so if we think about the user experience here and we think about how they interact on the front end of the website, is it the person who's going to be the primary buyer? Do they effectively share a link with their friends, a URL link of some, a hyperlink of some variety? Then when they go to the website, the second, third, fourth, fifth person that comes to the website, are they effectively creating a draft order of their own that you're then merging together at checkout? Is that what you're doing? Or are you taking cart ID of the original person, you're taking that cart ID and you're letting them effectively modify that existing cart ID and linking it to more than one customer account in Shopify? Or are you effectively doing the merge process at checkout?
So that's a really good question as well. What we do is essentially, as you said, we have different means of sharing. You can share via email, via, as you say, copy a link, via your preferred messaging platform. So we obviously try to make it as easy as possible to share the experience. The way once, so if you and I were in a group shopping experience together, or if I invited you into a shared shopping experience, you would essentially have your own cart on your end. So you and I will both have our own carts. And then what we do is actually just make sure that it's the same on each session of each user in here. The reason why we do it that way is because if we start sharing card IDs and so on and so forth, we start potentially messing with all the functionality in the cart. And the cart is actually quite complex on most platforms. So we really don't want to mess with that, because if that doesn't work, it's revenue lost for whichever shop is you're running. So that's why we essentially just make sure that the carts are the same on all the sessions that are in that particular group. And that actually had some positive follow-ons that we didn't even expect once we built it, when we initially built it. But usually you have like marketing, remarketing features that are hooked up to the cart. And we can actually leverage that as well once we start synchronizing the carts between the different users. So a really interesting example would be that, so if I add stuff to the cart and I'm thinking, oh, I need to ask Jason for some input for this particular, what I'm buying here, it may be a gift, but it may also just be that there's a group discount for something. So maybe I'm asking you, hey, do you want something as well? And when I invite you into my experience, the items I added to the cart will automatically be synchronized to your cart as well. And you may add something as well. And the remarketing features, let's just say we drop off the cart, but actually a lot of the remarketing setups today will look at what I've added to the cart, and then I'll be retargeted on other platforms. If I hadn't added, so if I just invite you and you don't get anything into your cart, the remarketing engine will be doing other stuff. It won't know that the two of us are linked. And that's actually some new real power in what we're doing, is you very quickly move people from just being looking, if they're part of the group, to actually being engaged with the shop. And that just triggers other aspects of the remarketing engine.
And so does that mean that potentially if I go in and I add a couple items to my cart and then I leave because the primary buyer is the one who's responsible for pulling the trigger and paying, does that mean that if there's five people contributing to a cart and they're mirrored across all of them, that I'm going to get, say, for example, all five are going to get an abandoned cart email if they don't make the purchase?
So that's definitely something we're working on. Yes, you can argue right now it would be like that, but actually once I pay, your carts will be cleared. So we have a methodology to do that. But that's certainly, we launched a little over 6 months ago. So we're obviously running into some issue, I would say, not issues, but challenges.
Teething issues,
exactly, that pop up. And those are obviously something that we're working on. How can we add additional information for the marketing engines different markers, so the marketing engines will start doing working differently. And that's something we're working through with our initial customers to say, okay,
don't fire your metric of abandoned cart.
Exactly.
Cool.
But that's
and yeah, of course, it makes sense. And so I go, someone sends me a link. They say, hey, look, go and add the items to the cart that you'd like to send to mom, me and my sibling, or siblings if I've got siblings. And we all add items to our cart, which then get mirrored in the master buyer's cart. And how do they get notified that the cart has been updated? The person who's initiating the buying, how do they get notified?
So you have the ability. So we work with users in different levels, I would say. So you can be completely anonymous and still use the platform. What we're working on is to enable you to get native notifications on your device. So you can say, accept and say, when other people in my shared experience do something, I'll accept to get push notifications. And so that's one way that you can get notified. You can also add your email. So you can elevate your user, if you can say like that, from being completely anonymous to being something where you say, I've added an email, so we can push notifications to your email. You can also add your phone number if you want, and then we can send you an SMS. Again, what we're working on in that aspect is we want to remove as much friction as possible so it will work without you having to sign up or anything. And then you just need to accept that you get push notifications. Then you'll get, whenever I write you a message, someone in the group adds to the cart and so on and so forth, you'll get push notifications for that. And that actually helps drive traffic. So if you're a store owner, what it will do is, because the social aspects are now happening within your store, your customers will actually keep coming back to your store. So you retain them in the store, which means you have more of their attention time within your store instead of what we do today, keep coming back to a messenger thread, which is out of context.
Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening. And so this social interaction, the chats, the adding to the cart, et cetera, what type of interface is that? Is that a separate mobile app that is the abstract app that's happening on a mobile device, or is it happening within the web store interface, the standard web store interface, and it's more like a live chat window that is then that you're all opted in to that thread within the live chat window? What is the actual conversational interface and where does it live?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, the latter part of what you mentioned is what we're doing. It happens within the store on the website. So our business model is actually not to be a shopping platform. Our business model is to sell to the store as an add-on feature for their shopping experience. And it lives on the store, or sorry, the website UI or web store UI.
The storefront.
Storefront. On the storefront. So you can actually engage there. And again, we do not have an intention to be a platform as such. So I think that's also where we're very different from other startups that have been trying to do similar stuff, is that we're not aiming to be a platform where the users go to shop. We're actually selling to the stores to be part of their storefront and providing new shopping experiences on their storefront.
And so I would authenticate, I'd go to the Shopify store in question, I'd follow the link, I would then authenticate. I'm guessing it's setting a cookie or it's doing something that identifies me as part of this group shopping experience. It's then going to activate effectively almost like a live chat window, but it's specific to my group shopping link that's the unique URL. I'm guessing it's a cookie that then identifies which group I'm a part of so that it activates the right chat window. Now, I guess if I'm part of more than one group buying experience, then that's where it could start to potentially get a little bit tricky because I'd need to follow the link from multiples. And then do I have multiple chat windows open? I guess that's probably an edge case. It's probably a happy edge case for you if you're in part of multiple shopping experiences.
That is actually not the case. We have a, if we're going into a bit of technical detail, as you mentioned, you have a cookie, but we actually, the cookie is not linked to the card. The cookie is linked is actually for who are you as a user. And then you can actually be linked to multiple cards, and we have UI. So that's also where we're a bit different, I would say, than a lot of other, actually than a lot of storefronts out there. You can't really have multiple cards at the same time, but we can actually do that. So you're able, so our UI resembles very much, right now at least, resembles a chat where you can have multiple chat groups. It's essentially the same. You can have multiple shopping experiences, and you can actually click back and forth. And then we essentially make sure once you change from one basket or cart, one shopping experience to another,
or one thread to the other.
Exactly. We just change the basket.
Okay. So you just swap out the card ID and hey, this is the card ID that's loaded.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, cool. No, sounds really good. I'm sorry I'm getting so technical, but as somebody who's quite technical, trying to understand the linkage between kind of the native functionality of the platform, the additional functionality that you bring to the table, and then the user experience that's driven hanging off the backside of that, I'm really trying to just wrap my head around this because I've never, in full transparency, never used your platform before, haven't seen it before, so I'd have to go by what's on the tin, and that's where kind of all these questions are coming from.
Of course. And I think that's also where we're quite unique in the sense that you could have these multiple shopping experiences at the same time. The funny thing is that when we've been looking, doing some user testing, there are actually some users that say, oh, now if I'm buying complex equipment, so if it's a computer, for example, we don't have any customers yet selling computers, but I think it was a funny scenario that popped up that there was actually one of our, in a user test, one user that said, oh, this is pretty nice because when I'm configuring, usually if I'm buying a new computer, I try and configure it in different ways. And then I need to take a screenshot to remember how I configure it to see the price. And then I empty the card and then I configure the other parts. And then I take a new screenshot. Then in the end, I compare. But now with our shared shopping experience, I can actually just do multiple cards for myself. And then I can easily switch back and forth until I say, oh, this is the one I want. And then I checked that out. So it was just a funny scenario of a user wanting to use it in a completely different way than what we originally intended. But it solved the
multi-card
problem for this particular, exactly.
Which might normally, like for this exact use case, might be solved by a wish list app, a wish list or a shopping list app, where they would have multiple wish lists and then they would compare the wish list totals. But they're almost using you like a wish list app.
Exactly.
And do you see yourself expanding the functionality of the platform to provide functionality like a gift registry or a wish list type of functionality? Do you see yourself expanding and enhancing that capability to be, and from a UI UX perspective, to be more like a wish list or I guess it would be more like a gift registry app?
Yeah, yes. The short answer is yes. We certainly want to be able to do that. Once you have people tied together in a group, what you do with it just opens new opportunities. And it's more of a UX, UI perspective from where we are right now to add the wishlist functionality. Say I'm creating a group where instead of adding to the cart, I'm just adding to wishlist. And we're working on different UI aspects to actually make it more engaging to shop in a store. So one of the things that we see a number of users do when they shopped or asked friends for input, for example, women buying clothes, it's very common that they take screenshots and send it to their friends, say, should I have this dress in yellow or blue or green, or does this top go with these jeans or this skirt or whatever? And it becomes a lot of screenshots on a thread, which is out of context. So you don't really know, depending on how long this is actually taking place, there's a tendency to things getting forgotten. So we're working on that can actually enable the user to actually put multiple items up against each other and say, hey, friends in the group, vote for which one should I take or stuff like that. So it becomes more engaging to actually shop within the store.
And I guess it also creates a scenario where, okay, it's my birthday that's coming up. I'm going to create the group as opposed to, say, my sibling or my parent or my child. I'm going to actually create the group. I'm going to initiate the group from the UI. I maybe add one or two items to the cart to kick things off, and then I throw it over to the group and I say, you guys add products to the cart that you'd like to maybe get for my birthday too, or you can decide which items you want to gift to me, so to speak, of this list of items. And do you have the concept of moving the ownership of the group to someone else? So for example, I initiate it because it's my birthday that's coming up, but I move the ownership of this group off to my child or my sibling because ultimately I want them to make the final purchase. So I effectively transfer ownership of the group from me to someone else.
Yeah. So that is actually doable as it is right now. I would say right now it's very open. So let's say we don't have administrative privileges set up right now because that adds to the complexity of creating and managing a group. But the way I could do it as of right now would be that I initiate the group. I invite you, maybe some other people, and then I lead the group. And then you guys, because everyone's an administrator as it is right now. So that is obviously creates additional challenges down the road, but we don't want to add too much friction right now because we want it to be as easy for the users to start engaging. We are aware that this will become part of the issues that will potentially pop up at a later stage once people become used to actually using such functionality. But there is no reason to make it more complex right now. So we're trying we want to see it being a problem before we actually start solving that.
Solving for it.
Exactly.
And as of right now, anyone in the group can check out with that cart, or is it only the person who initiated the group can check out with the cart?
Right now, anyone can check out.
Okay. So anybody can check out. And then at the point where any one of these five people that are in the group check out, then that clears the carts for everybody that's in the group.
Exactly.
Okay, fantastic. And presumably that would by definition mean that any of the available payment methods available at checkout can be used for that cart.
Correct.
Wow, amazing. Yeah, it's a really interesting concept. And yeah, I guess I'm exploring what this platform is and does and how it will ultimately work via question. And hopefully I've asked all the same kind of questions my audience would have when they were looking at this type of platform and looking at potentially either implementing it on their own website or if they bump into it in the wild, they're going to know what it is, which is pretty exciting. Yeah. What's on your roadmap for the next 12 months, what's your top priorities in terms of functionalities to add to the platform apart from maybe payments?
Yeah, so it's certainly continuous work on the notification aspects because the ability to notify people whenever something happens to keep coming back, that's certainly one of the things that is high on our priority list. But once we have that done, it's actually about, I think the next functionality we have on our roadmap is to actually add something like a wish list functionality, the ability to attach and detach a cart that I could be part of an experience, but actually not having my own cart updated so that it may sound, it adds to the fact that you can be, instead of being a part of a group that is shopping, I can actually just be someone who comes in as a friend to advise. So that kind of functionality is something we're working on as well. And then it's about making the UI nicer, adding the ability for the store to actually feed messages into the group chat so they can push different things with the groups. So that's obviously something we're talking to customers about because once they start seeing, oh, there's this chat here, then we naturally get the questions, oh, how can I get access to pushing stuff or retarget and say, oh, we have this new promotion. If you have added a particular product, if you buy two or three of those, you can get a discount. So those are things that we're working on. But it is a dialogue with customers right now to figure out what we need to prioritize. But certainly the notification aspects is what is highest on our to-do list because that really drives traffic back to the store, which is one of our value propositions.
And I guess being able to mirror those conversations in other platforms, like maybe Messenger, WhatsApp, whatever, being able to mirror those, have the links be cross-transferred to where it can always be linked back to, creating a discussion thread. I feel like leveraging those other technologies via their APIs so that people can be notified however they wish to be notified, whether that be a push notification in your app, whether that be via email, whether that be by text message, whether that be via Messenger, WhatsApp, whatever. It feels like that if I have control over the ways that I get notified when my cart gets updated or a cart that I'm a part of gets updated, then there's no chance that I guess I would miss the fact that cart has been updated.
That's true. And that is why for you guys, that has a lot of focus for us.
It makes complete sense. The communication channels are really important.
I think it's key, and it is key because a lot of people have asked us, why have you started with chat? Why are you not adding video conferencing or just a speech or voice? And actually, there's a reason why we started with chat as the communication method, because chat works in an asynchronous fashion. I can come back and chat whenever I want to. We do not necessarily have to be there at the same point in time. And I think that's of huge value also from a shopping or group shopping experience perspective. Because it's nice that we can be together. And I think it's very nice from a demo perspective that we can show, when I add something to the cart, instantly it's in your cart as well. Mm-hmm. But what will mostly happen is that I have a couple of minutes here. So I'll just go in and see, what did you write? I add something, write a message, and then I'm out again. And then whenever you have time, you can come back and you'll get the notification. And then whenever you have time, you'll come pop in and say, I'll just check the product. I think we should take it in a different color or something like that. It's just, we're so used to today that we can engage socially, but on our own time. And that's why we really wanted to start there to cater to that. It is, of course, on our roadmap as well to do a video or voice, but it's not higher on our priority list right now.
Makes complete sense. And how do you guys make your money? So how do you charge the store owner? It's clearly a SaaS platform. It's a Shopify app in the case of Shopify. Do you charge like a fixed monthly fee? Do you charge a percentage of the carts that people check out with that you have managed? How do you guys make your money?
Yeah, so that's a really good question as well. So what we're going to market with is a fixed monthly fee. And then we have depending on the complexity of the onboarding, we have an onboarding fee. And then we have a percentage of what we can prove is due to the shared shopping feature. So we take 1% cut of the cart. So the way we calculate it is that if I initiate the cart and I share it with you, let's say I add $100 worth of goods to the cart and you add an additional $30 to the cart, then we say the initiator would probably buy what that person would buy anyways, but what everyone else adds to the cart is what we can prove is due to the shared shopping feature, and we take a cut of that.
That's the incremental add that you guys bring to the table.
Exactly. And I think the interesting part right now is that with our initial customers, we can actually see that when the customers shop together, we can see an increase in cart size by 31 to 40%. Somewhere in between that. So it's actually quite a huge difference.
It's a significant uplift.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect that it would stay at that point once it starts scaling, but it's certainly a significant uptake.
Makes complete sense. And so as of today, your Shopify app is ready to go. So I can go to the Shopify app store and I can install it today and start using it straight away, right?
Unfortunately, it's not a Shopify app right now, but it's more as a Google Analytics. You get a script tag, you just add to your template, then it works.
Okay. Oh, so it's just a JavaScript snippet?
Yeah.
That's how you implement the platform today?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. And you said your JavaScript currently works with Shopify and Woo, and any other platforms on your radar to get this working with?
Certainly Salesforce and commerce tools is something we're looking at, but BigCommerce as well, because that's really growing fast as well. We don't have the implementations yet for those because we haven't run into customers that are using that, or at least not to a point where we started implementing. But the really cool thing is that we have an implementation pattern that can be followed. So even if you have a completely custom front end, which is one of our customers have, you can actually implement following our guidelines within a day or two, depending on the complexity. But it's very easy to implement.
I guess as long as you have access to the card object and the card ID and an API to be able to modify the cart, then you're pretty much good to go.
That's true. That's true.
Fantastic, Kim. Look, this has been exciting. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Sounds like you're doing some exciting things over at Abstract. I wish you every success. Now, as we come down to the end of our time together, I love to turn the microphone over to my guests, let them ask me one question, any question they like. It can be personal or professional. So Kim Lovert from Abstract, what is your question for me today?
Yeah, so I think actually my question is to you, what do you see as the three biggest challenges facing e-commerce businesses in 2024?
The three biggest challenges. I think that's an amazing question. That's an awesome question. I think probably one of the biggest ones is for brands to stay the course and continue to invest in an uncertain market. I think that's probably the single biggest one I would call out, because I see a lot of brands holding fire, maybe pulling back on marketing spend, maybe pulling back on new product development, pulling back on partnerships, pulling back on collaborations, just pulling in their horns a little bit and saying, look, there's a lot of uncertainty in the market. We don't know what stock market in the United States is currently at all-time highs. Is it a bubble? Is it going to burst? Interest rates, are they going to go up? Are they going to go down? Deficits in the United States at all-time highs. We know that when America gets a sniffle, the world gets a cold. So the reality is, I think there's a fair amount of uncertainty in the market right now, especially around interest rates. And I think it's that interest rate uncertainty that's got people a little bit off guard. And we've still got very low unemployment in the United States right now. We've got almost full employment. So people are thinking, what is the after Silicon Valley Bank and how the Fed ran to the rescue of Silicon Valley Bank? After that, what is the next thing to break in the economy? What is it going to take to cool off the economy and continue to bring down inflation? And I think it's that uncertainty associated with a bit deer in the headlights at the moment. Mm. And so I would say that people need to always, when there's uncertainty and there's kind of blood in the water, that's the opportunity to grab a whole lot of market share usually. Mm. And especially during downturns, when if you can make hay while the sun shines during a downturn and not only survive but thrive during a downturn, it means when the market comes back up again that you're going to be riding a pretty high wave. I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing is channel diversification. I think a lot of brands think they're channel agnostic, but they're really not. They're really over-reliant. Even if they're an omni-channel business and maybe they've got a few retail stores and they've got online, they'll have 80, 90% of their revenue coming from one channel. And I think that's super risky. And I think that goes for not only transactional channels, but marketing channels. I think there's an over-dependence in most businesses on one or two sales channels and one or two marketing channels. And I think that is super risky. And what I'm seeing more and more is in particular, D2C brands, manufacturing brands, wholesale brands, direct-to-consumer brands, starting to look at strategic wholesale as a really good way to diversify channel risk. And say, look, we need to establish a strategic wholesale channel and maybe B2B e-commerce, for example. So I think it's the deer in the headlights and people not making decisions. I think that's a really problematic thing. I think channel mix is a really, and channel diversification is a real problem. And I think differentiation is a real challenge for most brands. I think that there is going to be massive consolidation over the next 2 to 5 years on who sells what and where. Because I think that just being a me too retailer doesn't really work anymore. If you're selling the same shit as everybody else, it's always going to be a race to the bottom in terms of price. And I'm still seeing that be an issue today. I'm still seeing, when I go to Reddit, I'm still seeing 2, 3, 4 posts a day. Oh, I've set up this new e-commerce website. I've spent $5,000 or $1,000 or $2,000 on Meta ads. I'm getting traffic to my website, but I'm making no sales. What makes you special? There's nothing special. When I go to your website, it builds no trust. It has no story. You have no brand, and you're carrying the same crap as that you get off of AliExpress and you're reselling via dropship. So I think that differentiation piece, and I think dropshipping largely is fading away as a viable business model, especially in the retail space. And so I think differentiation, exclusive product lines, exclusive ranges, white labeled products. I think this is where brands can differentiate and they can start to get out of the race to the bottom in terms of price. So I think curation, exclusive lines, and branded products, I think this is where, because you got a lot of manufacturers going direct to consumer now. So this is the reality. But yet we're seeing that direct to consumer brands, the world's biggest direct to consumer brands, are really struggling outside of the physical retail space, because 80% of retail sales are still done through physical retail. So I think omnichannel is really becoming important. You have to be an omnichannel brand. You cannot be, it's very difficult to be a digital pure play or a physical pure play anymore.
I agree.
Well, listen, Kim, it's been a fantastic conversation. I cannot wait to speak to you again soon. I'll put all your contact details down below. I'll put your LinkedIn profile link. I will also put in the link to the Abstract website. Apart from that, how do you like people to get a hold of you?
Yeah, to be quite honest, reach out either via LinkedIn or email or I usually always answer pretty quickly. I would love to talk about what we're doing and just general e-cars. That's my life. So I would like to share and hear from anyone who would like to engage.
Love it, Kim. Thank you so much. And I can't wait to speak to you again soon.
Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.